we are moving to our next topic of Christian ethics. And after talking about sexual ethics and various topics like masturbation, thank you, Scott, for your scintillating discussion of that. We're going to be talking about birth control. So when you look at this topic of Christian ethics, okay, let's try to get in front of this. Why is birth control a topic that needs to be discussed?
Because of the different mechanisms that birth control imposes on the woman's body.
Okay. Let's kind of flesh that out. Like, what would be the controversy there?
Because some birth control causes an abortion, essentially. Causes the implanted egg to be flopped.
Okay.
And sometimes it's chemical.
Yep. Yeah, so there's the issue of abortion, right? And we've already taught on abortion, and the Bible's teaching is squarely against abortion. So that would be one of the considerations that we'd have to consider. Why else would a birth control be an important topic to discuss?
Because children matter.
Because children matter, okay. Yeah, let's draw that out a little bit. Yeah.
I think there's also just the underlying that they matter and that they're made in the image of God. Just do we value procreation? What's the purpose of marriage and the family? And that underlying, other than the preserving and preventing abortion, but
yeah,
even if you're not aborting,
yeah,
the morality.
Do we really want to control birth? Right?
That question.
And so you look at an institution like Planned Parenthood. It's kind of ironically named, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's not about planning to be parents. It's all about planning not to be parents. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, why else is birth control somewhat of a controversial issue?
It's a little bit of a modern conversation.
Okay. So it's a modern conversation. So,
I mean, I don't know how many years ago, but a lot of the especially like the medical side of it is a newer phenomenon. It's not an age old practice.
Yeah, so there's it was unknown, right, in biblical times. I mean, they would have birth control, but how did they practice birth control 2,000 years ago?
Naturally,
right? Abstinence, right?
Yeah. Spilling your seed.
Yeah.
We're just using Bible words.
Yeah. Well, there were sheepskin or sheep intestine condoms, you know, dating back to Egyptian times too. Uh-huh. So it wasn't, you know, non-natural versions were available at that point. Not like go down to.
But exceedingly
rare.
Yeah.
Very
right.
Expensive.
Yeah.
Very
but the,
expensive.
The
yeah.
very first command is be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
So there are Christians who believe we need to be as fruitful as possible and multiply as much as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part's probably tied too to the birth control pill, for example.
Yeah.
Came at the same time and was joined with the sexual revolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So sexual practice and thoughts on sex and freedom and marriage and singleness, all those get mixed up with birth control. In the common era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the common era, birth control was, it's up there as far as one of the most revolutionary technologies of the 20th century.
Yeah.
I mean, you have air travel and all that, but when it comes down to it, I mean, birth control transformed society, right? And there was a potency and a power, because what you were able to do with birth control was sever sex from the possibility of procreation. And then shortly thereafter, right, abortion came in. So what birth control was not able to do, you're able to finish the job with abortion, right? And so we had a new sexual revolution. Other thoughts on why birth control is a controversial topic, right? So that association, I think there's some queasiness there, right?
I think it dramatically changes a woman's life and options to be able to use birth control. It just, if you can never use birth control and you're a married woman, you just expect that my life is always going to be determined by whether or not I'm pregnant that year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's more bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
Right. Judy?
And back when it first came out, it was said to promote promiscuity.
Uh-huh.
Because there wasn't the fear of pregnancy.
Yep.
We were on birth control.
Yep.
So both, it was available to all women, married and unmarried.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of brought in the age of promiscuity.
Yeah.
Along with it.
Yeah.
Interestingly, at first, in many countries, they would only give it to married women. They tried to control it so that it didn't cause an explosion of promiscuity.
Yeah.
But that lasted a couple of years.
Yeah.
America actually did, so the first couple of years I had a cousin who was a doctor, and their clinics actually had rules.
Yep.
And you had to sign a paper that confirmed that you were married,
yep.
And you had to show, like you had to show them your marriage license.
Mm-hmm.
And show evidence.
Same in England.
But it was only a couple of years, and
yep.
And it was super prevalent in small towns, in Kansas in particular.
Yeah, and I don't know, I know there was some Supreme Court case
yeah.
that preceded Roe versus Wade,
yep.
that it's like the Griswold decision,
yep.
that I think opened it up for unrestricted use.
Right.
And yeah, so they had a point. I mean, and so it kind of, like, there's a certain queasiness when you see one invention change the sexual behavior of an entire generation and society,
mm-hmm.
right? Should Christians have a part of that? Right? So all that's to say, like, when we talk about birth control, I mean, there's societal implications for it. There's individual implications for it. No, is it, and I think the issue that we're going to deal with, is it permissible for Christian couples, you know, who are married, right? We all agree that fornication's wrong and abortion's wrong, right? But is there a place for birth control? And if there is a place for birth control, what kind of birth control is permissible and what isn't? Okay, so those are just some of the issues that we're going to be talking about today. And so I thought I'd maybe give you some background, because really the major opponents of birth control, right, in the world today would be the Roman Catholic Church. And a lot of thinking about birth control is linked to some of their thinking about sex. So we're going to interact with them quite a bit. You know, you kind of have like the sexual revolution on the left, the Roman Catholic Church on the right. Not that I'm just going to split an arbitrary third way, but we do have to kind of consider arguments both ways, right? So I'll just read this to you. In today's day and age, the major opponent of birth control is a Roman Catholic Church. Therefore, understanding their perspective may be helpful in framing the debate. During the period of the early church, Christians wrestled between two extremes with regards to sex. On one hand, there was a desire to avoid the promiscuity sanctioned by the antinomians. On the other, antinomians, you know what that means? Like people who are lawless. Okay? On the other hand, Christians rightly sensed complete abstinence advocated by the Gnostics was wrong. So Gnostics, that was a group of philosophers and, I guess, some theologians, they were heretical, that believed that the body was inherently evil, right? So they had all kinds of strange convictions about what you could and couldn't do. So St. Augustine sought to mitigate these concerns by teaching that while the fleshly pleasure of sex satisfied desire, this negative byproduct could be justified by the greater good of procreation. Naturally, this train of thought allowed no room for contraception. Centuries later, St. Thomas Aquinas reaffirmed Augustine's disdain for birth control. While he did not see the physical pleasure of sex as morally reprehensible, he affirmed that procreation was a primary purpose of sex. Thus, every sexual act had to allow for the potential to conceive. Even sexual union with one's pregnant wife was considered sinful. Thus, the only acceptable means of birth control would be complete abstinence or continence. Little change occurred in the Catholic position of the 20th century. In 1930, Pope Pius XI published an encyclical which agreed with the previous injunctions against birth control. However, this document did allow for sexual union in marriage where procreation was not possible. His reasoning, while the primary purpose of sex is procreation, there exists a secondary purpose in the abatement of lust and fostering mutual love. In 1932, Agino Mouse published a theory which provided the basis for the rhythm method. It taught that women were only capable of conception during certain times of the month. Consequently, with a little planning and a brief period of abstinence, a couple could avoid conception. After much thought and investigation, the rhythm method was endorsed by the Catholic Church. So in light of the above, upon what basis do Catholics oppose birth control?
It's a little actually confusing, the argumentation, once they embrace the rhythm method.
Yeah.
Because there actually is a, they are affirming that there's a place for sexual relationship mm-hmm. without procreation.
Yeah.
And so if they didn't allow for that, mm-hmm. then there'd be a consistent argumentation that it is that procreation is a primary purpose, therefore there has to be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But once they allow for that alternative,
yeah.
for me it's unclear why they wouldn't allow other methods of birth control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was asking the Pope the other day, and he just did not have
yeah.
an answer.
Yeah.
This Pope probably wouldn't.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, what is their understanding of, you know, why do they oppose birth control?
Just procreation was the
yeah.
foundation. If it cannot allow for procreation, then it's sinful.
Yeah, and this is a, we shouldn't discount this theory too easily, right? Because when this is upheld consistently, right, it is easy for you to justify opposition to homosexuality, right? Homosexuality does not allow for any procreation at all. Therefore, it would be sinful, right? So in their mind, you know, this procreation argument is kind of like, you know, the barrier,
it's their wall.
Their wall that leads to all kinds of problems otherwise. And Roman Catholic theologians often argue through natural law. I mean, they do a lot of, they're pretty good at ethical reasoning. Okay, now I will disagree with them on that, you know, for reasons that Joshua brought up, but it is something to consider, right? When you take procreation out of sex, what happens to a society, what happens to a marriage, right? And I think very clearly procreation is probably the driving, you know, force behind the sexual union, right? Where I think a lot of these things are derivative of it. Like when you kind of, we kind of talked about some of the purposes of sex last week, right? What are some of the purposes? We have procreation. What else?
Pleasure.
Really, I can't remember the word, but relational.
Yeah, activity. Relational oneness.
Yeah, union.
Union. Yeah, what else? 1 Corinthians 7?
Temptation.
Temptation, oh, yeah. Right? So you kind of look at this, you know, umbrella of procreation. All the other ones keep a couple together. Right, so there's one act that makes you a parent, and then some of the other derivative functions keep you as parents, because they keep you together. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to strip away procreation, and I think if you, yeah, you have dropping birth rates right now, why is that bad news?
Because they won't take care of us old people.
Yeah.
You're clever. I'm the one.
I know.
I'm the one
I know.
Here.
So
yeah.
are my children.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a major issue in Ukraine. There's one baby for three deaths. Like the birth rate is so low in Ukraine that they're not disbanding 18 to 25 year old men to the battlefield. Who you would think they'd send, right? They're keeping them there because they know that if they die, if those men die, there'll be no babies and no future for the Ukraine.
Yeah, your safety net goes away. You
yeah.
know, if your generation is gone, your safety net for a country is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were those numbers pre-war?
No, it's currently with the war right now. They're already low.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So Western Europe is in a demographic crisis right now. Korea, yep. Japan,
Russia,
they're all, it's all super bad news. It's basically Africa is where the growth is, and some of India.
20 years ago in Spain, they were paying people 2,000 euros for every baby you had.
Yeah.
Wow.
Especially with more socialized systems in terms of healthcare and things,
sure.
You have to have a huge influx,
yes,
of like young people to begin working. And when it doesn't happen, the entire system collapses.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So for us to be Social Security, would be one of the key ways that happens.
Yes.
Yeah. The Surgeon General just issued a statement that being a parent is hazardous to your health.
And it's too stressful.
Too stressful.
I mean, I don't know if it's
stressful. Right?
It's stressful too.
You know, so.
Well, not anymore, we kick you out.
Yeah. So there is a. So you kind of see. You know, there's a point to this where, you know, birth control and the desire to limit birth, it's there's going to be a cost pay, society-wise, you know? And so, yes, it is something where just because you believe in birth control, you have to make sure that doesn't mean you don't believe in birth or parenting, right? But you do have this idea of how does their view of sex shape their policy? I mean, what is the Catholic view of sex, traditionally?
Procreation.
And it was negative because they have the highly monastic culture that values celibacy as the most godly option possible. And the Virgin Mary, who always stayed a virgin, it's so important that she always stayed a virgin.
Right. Yeah. So there's kind of this idea that because it's pleasurable. Do you need a hand up, by the way?
No. I'm just listening.
Can somebody bring a hand up?
I've got another one.
We've got a bunch.
Thank you.
Yes.
Anything for you, baby.
Whether I want it or not.
Maybe you know. I forget you taking care of. I'll get you coffee later, too. But, so it's kind of like this monastic, like, if it feels good, it's probably wrong, right? That's many reasons why I'm not Catholic. Like, I couldn't, like, priests are being, you know, held to celibacy. I mean, it's kind of
it's just a strange reasoning.
Yeah.
Like, music, you know, all the senses, you know, the world is created good. There's so many, like, why that one, that particular physical thing is wrong. And
Yeah. So that's, you know, what they get right on procreation, they really get wrong here. Okay? So that's why we can't necessarily just take natural law reasoning or Roman Catholic thought. We have to take it seriously because it does percolate things. But that's really the issue that we have to deal with, right? Is one, is birth control ethical or not? Is one, does it cause an abortion, right? If it causes an abortion, and we've established, and we can talk later if you weren't there for the class, that the Bible clearly prohibits abortion. Because of an abortion, it's automatically wrong, right? Mm-hmm. The second issue that we have to consider is, does birth control interfere with God's purposes for sex? Is procreation, does the possibility of procreation, or is the intentional prohibition of procreation necessarily wrong? Right, so I guess they would kind of go, they kind of shifted from you just can't prohibit procreation as opposed to you always have to be procreative with it, right? So that's a slight compromise at the root. So let's talk about the morality of contraceptive means, okay? I got a lot of these facts from abort73.com. It's a pro-life website. I like to say I'm not a biologist. I'm not a physician, I'm not a medical professional. This is just what I read on the internet. So, okay. Trust the internet. That's right. And Dr.
You know
Google.
The guy who runs it. He's a solid.
I do know the guy who runs it and everything. But I'm just saying that I could, you know, if I'm wrong on this, let me know. This is not the Bible, but just information, okay? So birth control methods which do not cause abortion. First one is continuous abstinence. no abortion will be caused by continuous abstinence. It's 100% effective. It's incredible. Okay? More people should try it. Continuous abstinence.
Yeah, how'd you do with that?
What are you doing later?
Okay.
College students are gone.
What kind of class
Oh, sorry.
Is
exactly. Okay.
There's still one college student here with her dad.
That's right. I'm kind of enjoying this dynamic, though. Right? Okay. So periodic abstinence or fertility awareness methods. Being abstinent on the days when you may be fertile, or using a barrier method of birth control, condoms, diaphragms, or cervical caps on fertile days. Then you have the male condom, prevents the sperm from reaching the egg. You have the female condom, worn by women, prevents sperm from reaching the egg. The diaphragm, a shallow latex cup that prevents sperm from reaching the egg, requires a visit to your healthcare provider for proper fitting. The cervical cap, a thimble-shaped latex cup that prevents sperm from reaching the egg, requires a visit to your healthcare professional for proper fitting. And then surgical sterilization, tubal ligation or vasectomy. Permanent surgical methods of birth control. Tubal ligations prevent a woman's eggs from going to reach her uterus. Vasectomies to prevent the sperm from entering a woman during intercourse.
Permanent so, may be an overstatement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But we had a child after.
So. And those are generally
permanent.
Considered
now, where did he have a vasectomy?
Reversible.
What was that?
It was a Mexican vasectomy, right?
Don't go down that road, brother.
That's not a slang term.
Well, in most cases, right? So I think clear barrier, I mean, these do not cause abortions, okay? So there is, so we're just establishing that there is a method that will never cause one. Okay, then you get into birth control methods which can cause abortion. You have the copper T, IUD, a small copper-containing device that is shaped in the form of a T and placed inside the uterus by a healthcare provider. The copper arms prevent fertilization by keeping sperm from entering the fallopian tubes. If fertilization does occur, the IUD would prevent the fertilized egg from implanting in the lining of the uterus, right? So you have the possibility of a fertilized egg not attaching. The progesterone IUD, a small plastic device that is shaped in the form of a T and placed inside a uterus by a healthcare provider. It contains the hormone progesterone, which causes the cervical mucus to thicken so sperm cannot reach the egg, and so that a fertilized egg cannot successfully implant into the lining of the uterus. The mini pill only has one hormone, progestin, instead of both estrogen and progestin. Taken daily, the mini pill reduces and thickens the cervical mucus to prevent sperm from reaching the egg. It also prevents a fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus. Then emergency contraception consists in taking two doses of hormonal pills taken 12 hours apart and started within 3 days after having unprotected intercourse to prevent a potentially fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus. Okay, so these are ones that that can. Not always, but they can.
To me, I want to follow up on the IUD. I'm not sure if it's both or just the copper IUD.
Uh-huh.
Amy's brother is actually an expert. He teaches, okay. He's an OBG and professor and a practitioner in San Antonio.
Okay.
And he would argue that they do not cause abortions ever.
Okay.
So, yeah, in fact, Amy just texted him to check. And he said they did a pretty comprehensive study and not a single sperm went through at all with an IUD.
Okay.
And they actually did like two different groups. And then I also read in the past, when I studied this, it's been a long time, and I'm also not a medical doctor, that if one were to go through, that the lining actually responds so quickly to the fertilization that it actually prepares itself to receive the fertilized egg. In terms of the immediate contraception, the chemicals in the woman's body change so rapidly that whatever negative effect is undone. Mm-hmm. So I say that it might be worthwhile to research that a little bit further.
Yeah.
I'm also not a medical doctor.
Yeah.
But it was viewed this way 20 years ago.
Okay.
Weren't you an IUD baby?
I was, actually. I had it in my hand on the way out of the womb. Can't stop me now, right?
So. And I say that because there's a lot of Christian women who use the IUD,
sure.
So it'd be worth going a deeper dive with more information. Now, 20 years ago, should they have been testing it if they thought it was preventing implantation?
Yeah.
That's a different ethical issue.
Right.
It's just kind of where we are today.
Yeah.
And that's because it doesn't contain the hormone?
Right.
Okay, so it's not, gotcha.
So the copper one is different from the other one?
I think so. I mean, you could literally talk to my brother-in-law, Luke. He'd be happy to...
Yeah, and ultimately what I will counsel people is do your research, talk to a doctor.
Yeah.
So and then you kind of have birth control messages that might be able to cause an abortion. And this is probably a little bit closer to home. I know when Becky and I were engaged, we were given a little book by Randy Alcorn on contraception. Do you remember that? And it kind of like, we didn't really know. But I'll kind of explain their argument. So within the pro-life community, there's much debate about the methods of birth control listed below. All of them function in basically the same way. They inject into a woman through a variety of means, two hormones, estrogen and progestin. These work to, one, prevent ovulation, two, thicken the mucus lining, prevent fertilization, and three, make the uterus unsuitable for implantation, at least in theory. It is upon this last point where differences of opinions lie. The first two mechanisms are contraceptive, and the third, if it occurs, is not. If you go to the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists website, you will find two different position papers on the subject. One portion of the membership believes that birth control pills are an abortifacient, and the other portion believes that while the condition of the uterus is altered, it does not thereby prevent implantation. If you want to get to the bottom of the issue for the sake of your own conscience, it will take some focused research, beginning with the papers above. Randy Alcorn also has a comprehensive and well-documented book available for purchase or download that argues that the birth control pill does cause abortions. Alcorn and his wife had used the pill before this painful discovery. If you're not willing to put in the time and the research this issue for yourself, or if you start the research and decide that there's too much information to sort through for you, there's only one safe conclusion. If you're not convinced in your own mind that the pill is not an abortifacient, then the only course of action is not to use it. So some of the ones listed below are oral contraceptives, also called the pill, delivers hormones orally through a daily pill. You have the implant or Norplant 2, the product taken off the market in July 2002, delivers hormones via rods that are placed under the skin. Depo Provera, hormones delivered through injections or shots in the buttocks or arm every 3 months. The patch, OrthoEvra, hormones delivered through the skin patch worn in the lower abdomen, buttocks, or the upper body. The hormonal vagina contraceptive ring, NuvaRing, hormones delivered through a ring that are inserted in the vagina for 3 weeks at a time. So this is kind of what Joshua was talking about. I mean, part of it is you have to talk to a trusted Christian gynecologist. That's what I'd advise you to do. But then you get into the issue of if there's like a 1% chance, what do? That it could cause an abortion.
You don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's a 0.001% chance, what do?
Don't do it.
Yeah, and I think that's when it's kind of a gray area. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, at what point is it completely impossible? I don't know. But I think for us, I mean, we just decided to use the barrier method. You know what I'm saying? Just for the sake of conscience. But I don't want to bind someone's conscience. But I think it is worth letting people know that, you know, some abortion, you know, some birth control pills are abortifacients. That is how they function. Any thoughts?
Well, I think the fact that birth control pills are none of them much more than 90% effective. You're gonna send the fertilizer in at some point. And mm-hmm. the chemicals cause either it to be not implanted or aborted.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really the problem for me with birth control pills, just because they've never been super effective.
Uh-huh.
They are for some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think general consensus, I mean, I don't think any of them have gone over 90%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe the newer ones, I don't know.
Yeah.
But when we researched it, they were not.
somehow affected because they're not always used, or is that
just they're just not.
They can't do the job.
They're just not. Everybody's body responds differently to the chemical.
Okay. Well, and there's things that interfere with them too. If you're on antibiotics or something, you can easily mess with the behavior of the way they're supposed to work.
Right.
Yeah.
I the numbers I heard were much more effective than 90%.
That it's been a few years for me, Naomi. So.
Yeah, and this is something.
But you're saying 90% preventing,
correct,
any sort of
fertilization,
right. And then that's why you have the backup hormone that makes your womb a hostile place for life.
Yeah.
And that's the one where we really have
the
question.
So you're saying that they're over 90% effective at preventing pregnancy, but less around that in terms of like sometimes
fertilization.
That 5-10 between the 0-10%.
The 10%.
The 10% is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one thing that Joshua brought up, and again, I'm not a science guy, is that the implantation is still possible if the egg gets through. But this is something where I would just encourage you guys to do your research and at least know it's an issue and take it seriously. But I also think, what was I going to say? But there are other methods too, I mean, as far as controlling that. The other thing is birth control has, it impacts a woman's body, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of women that can't take it.
Yeah.
The women in my family could never take birth control.
Yeah.
Just because of the effects that it had. Side effects were terrible. So Floyd and I, because we were in school, ended up going with a Catholic program called Natural Family Planning.
Uh-huh.
And it is, so, and honestly, that is where our kids have all, they've had to kind of go to that. It is a for real training program that you sit in class. And I don't know if it still exists. It was offered at K-State. We were Christians.
Yeah.
It was, and it, you know, we were, of course, we were in the center of the sexual revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the Catholic Church was rising above.
Mm-hmm.
And really offering alternatives to students.
Yeah.
So we ended up going to a, you know, three of their classes. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think another thing too is, you know, if you believe that birth control is permissible, right? Yeah, I always encourage men, you know, you can have your, you know, insist that your wife, you know, takes all the precautions, right? Or you could take some precautions. And am I being discreet here? Yeah. Yes. And that's what I'd even say too, like, you know, a man who won't get a vasectomy. I'm like, I'll just say this. It's like, she bore children. Right? Yeah, there is a place for, you know, a selfless act.
I did
that
twice. Regard.
Well, you did.
But I made clear, I'm not doing it a third time.
Two's
the limit.
Two's the limit. Yeah. Well, you probably have a free one because of the punch card. Yeah, but does that make sense? I mean, because, I mean, I think that's the other thing, is like the birth control, I mean, the woman takes all the risk. Her body is the one who's most affected by it, right? So there is something in a marriage relationship that, that the man needs to be willing to maybe sacrifice some of the pleasure for the benefit of the woman so that she doesn't have to. Yeah.
This is a little bit different, but it makes me think. There are times when a man will have a conviction about needing to be as fruitful as possible.
Yeah.
And the wife's, like, physically, I don't think I can do this again.
Yeah.
And he just keeps insisting. So there's a place of, like, mutual love and conscience that could inform the decision as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll talk about that element too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just as far as birth control doesn't mean birth prevention.
Mm-hmm.
But just how that works out in the place of technology. But I do think, you know, when it comes to this issue of abortifacient and everything, you do your research, and then Romans 14:5, one man regards one day above another, another regards every day alike. Let each man be fully convinced in his own mind. And that's why, like, you know, you guys have access to a gynecologist, and you trust his opinion and are willing to do that.
Yeah.
You know he won't lead you astray. The true answer is known only to God, but we do the best with what we can. And there might be some reasons why birth control versus something else. That makes sense. And I think, it's been years, right? So we're kind of out of that phase, so I haven't necessarily considered. But it is something to really think deeply about.
Well, we're also teaching our children, so you're about to come on.
That is
true.
We
went through it with our children reaching childbearing age.
Yeah.
And I had three girls who all came to mom. And
yeah.
So you have to, even if you're past it, you have to consider it and pray about it and know what scripture says to be able to counsel.
Yeah, I do premarital counseling.
And I have girls that are going past childbearing. I mean, they are. Mm-hmm. One of them had very traumatic last birth. We had to talk about, you know, what's the next step? Where do we go? And so you have to be prepared to counsel.
Yeah.
Your children, even if you are past that. So.
Yeah.
It just strikes me too that it seems like how recent that for many. All of history is like we were just trying to keep kids alive. You know, they're just trying to get 12 pregnancies or 13, and they're lucky to get 3 or 4 that live.
Yeah.
To, you know, and so the ethical, it's such a different dynamic today.
Yeah.
To consider where it was like you were, everything was about trying to. And that it wasn't easy to be super fruitful at times.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult.
Yeah.
So it's a unique.
Yeah, and that's why you have to approach this topic from a pro baby, pro child perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? So you have to be pro baby, pro child. Really believe there's a blessing from the Lord. But is there a place for, we'll just say the barrier method, right? That's uncontroversial. You know, is there a place for that? So let's talk about two schools of thought. Okay? One is against contraception. Those who affirm the so-called natural family planning believe that every act of sexual union should be open to the possibility of procreation. From this viewpoint, no method of birth control is allowed that either presents a barrier to fertilization or introduces hormones that make the uterus inhospitable to a maturing embryo. 2, unopposed contraception. Other Christians believe that contraception may be used to limit the number of children born to a family as long as the method is not an abortifacient, causing an abortion. Okay, so those are the two schools of thought. Okay? And you do have, what is that? The Duggars, who had almost 20 kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly they would be in the first category. So against contraception, we'll look at some of these arguments and try to consider where they're coming from. Natural law dictates that everything in the universe has a final cause. When we look at God's design for the sexual organs, we see that their final cause is the procreation of human beings. God created sex for the purpose of procreation. Following this logic, we should abstain from contraceptives because they inhibit our sexual organs from fulfilling their natural function. So if you go out to the wild, right, we're not talking about ranchers. If you go out to the wild, I mean, sex is always procreative, right? In all the other species, that's kind of the end for which those organs were created. And so when you look at nature, it should be the same for us. It's been that way for, thousands of years, which, you know, a few exceptions. So biblical arguments, and we'll look at these one by one and talk about how they would support the argument against contraception. Genesis 1:28, God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So how could this passage justify the prohibition of contraception?
Well, it's a command from God.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It says to be fruitful and multiply. So if you just took this verse, without any other considerations, you might go, okay, well, that's pretty clear. We're supposed to have children.
Uh-huh.
That's the purpose God created this act for.
Okay. Other thoughts? You're going to say something, Noah?
Has to be at least three, right?
You have to be at least three. You're not multiply, yeah. factor greater than n, yeah?
Minimum.
Minimum. Right? Then this is the Bible story you don't find in the children's Bibles. Genesis 38, 6 through 10. Now Judah took a wife for Er, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Er, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of the Lord, so he took his wife. Then Judah said, Onan, go into your brother's wife
you
and perform...
You might want to reread that.
Huh?
Yeah.
The Lord took his life. Not he took his wife. If someone doesn't have the...
Well, that came out wrong. You think I'm in the Mormon church, right? All right, so Er, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord took his life. See, I think I'm going to need glasses. I'm honest. Okay, yeah. Then Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and perform your duty as a brother-in-law to her and raise up offspring for your brother. Onan knew that the offspring would not be his, so when he went into his brother's wife, he wasted a seed on the ground in order not to give offspring to his brother. But what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord, so he took his wife also. So
took his life.
Took his life.
Life. Boy, it's going to be a rough sermon today.
You want to borrow these?
We're just loosening you up, Dave.
Yeah, normally I have 14-point font, and this is only 12. So.
It's just that Becky is your life.
You know, life and wife are kind of the same.
They're just the same.
You know what? Sometimes I'm more romantic than I even know.
Just exudes from you.
Took his life also. Okay. All right. So how could this passage justify abortion? Or contraception.
Contraception,
sorry.
If you went to the last two sentences by itself,
yeah.
Then it would be him spilling his seed, period, is what displeased the Lord.
Yep.
And that, therefore the Lord killed him. So you don't want to, as
yeah.
Becky said, spill your seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on that? Yes, it's the Bible story that makes you blush and mispronounce words. Okay, now a shorter passage. Okay. This one's kind of interesting. Deuteronomy 23:1. No one who is emasculated or has made his male organ cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord. So how could this passage just prohibit contraception? Joshua, go ahead.
Equating vasectomy, for example,
yeah,
with being emasculated, which I find offensive.
Yeah, that's kind of it, right?
Yeah.
That this seems to prohibit vasectomies.
They may not understand what a vasectomy is.
Oh, God.
Your male organs are not cut off.
is this more of a
eunuch?
Yeah,
I was going to say.
More of a eunuch, but we'll talk more about it. But yeah, I mean, I'm like, okay, well, it's an argument they make, right? So we're just trying to understand it from their point of view.
So would they then say if anybody has the vasectomy, they can't go to church?
That's a good question. You know, I am sure that the Catholic Church is a spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
This Pope will let anybody in church.
Yeah.
Right? But if you go to, like, the hardcore Latin Mass Catholics, they may not let you take communion.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm sure you'll find somebody who would take it that seriously.
Yeah.
But you really do, like Joshua said, you need to understand the definition.
Yeah.
And it is not a vasectomy.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk. We'll talk more about it. Yeah, it's fun prepping for this. I'm like.
Gotten very far.
All right. Yeah, I haven't gotten too far. Yeah, we got to save it for the college students. We're all going to have fun. Oh, welcome back, college students.
You're on page 5. That's great.
Yeah. I know. Too bad you guys are gone. You'd watch Malachi participate quite a bit.
For the next few weeks.
Yes. All right. Contraception and other issues related to sexuality. There is a concern that the church has drunk the Kool-Aid of the sexual revolution. Birth control has been key and crucial in changing our society's sexual mores, as couples can now engage in intercourse without consequence. It used to be that the couples understood the potential of the act and would exercise greater caution in preceding it. But with the onset of effective contraception, promiscuity has little consequence. Sex can mean anything or nothing. So according to this train of thought, why should we discourage the use of birth control?
Promote sexual immorality.
Yeah. Yeah, you're participating in a technology that has led to all kinds of negative results and consequences for our culture. And then you have health concerns. Some reject artificial contraceptive devices on the ground that many of them have negative side effects on health. For example, IUDs facilitate pelvic infections and occasionally perforate the uterus. They are also associated with ectopic pregnancies and spontaneous abortions. Birth control pills can cause such problems as breakthrough bleeding, nausea, breast tenderness, and weight gain. They can also cause even more serious problems such as blood clots. The likelihood of these problems occurring increases for women over 35, while the risks are generally low enough that many women consider the advantages to outweigh them, some feminist groups view the risk as unnecessary. Other forms of contraception do not have such adverse side effects and do not put such a burden on women. It is also argued that the increase in birth control devices, especially the pill, may be tied to the rise of venereal disease. So those are just some of the arguments against contraception, and I think we'll go ahead just kind of stop there. Any closing thoughts before we move on from this discussion and wait for the college students next week to talk about the other perspective?
I know that with the health concerns, I have plenty of family members, and some of this may have been like aunts who were getting on certain medication when it was newer, and there's a lot more issues, but had very major issues the rest of her life because of it. And it seems like if you're going to try to chemically alter something that the body was designed to do, you're kind of asking for problems.
Yeah, and obviously with birth control, there's infertility, and it may not be because it causes infertility, but as you age, you get more infertile over time. So, I mean, there's a lot to consider with it. It's not an automatic, you should do this. So it's important to kind of weigh some of these concerns pretty seriously. All right, well, let me pray, then we'll move on to the next part of our worship service. Well, Father, we do come before you, and we do just pray as we kind of think biblically and just consider technologies and what it means to be faithful followers of you in this world, that you'll just give us wisdom, discernment, and the courage to do the right thing, and just the wisdom to know the right thing to do. I do pray for just some of the young families. I pray for even the grandparents as we kind of counsel and talk through these issues. That'll be done with compassion and wisdom and knowledge. In Christ's name.